KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
All that being said, I'd like to announce that I'm coming back for my senior year. I got one more season left to go in Austin, so...
And with that being said, I'll be returning for my senior year. Thank you, Oregon.
It's always been my dream to go to the NFL, but I think I'm going to come back for my senior season, finish out on the right note.
And, you know, after, you know, talking to, you know, the NFL committee and having a bunch of meetings with Coach Cristobal, you know, we decided that it would be best for me to come back for my senior season as well.
Did the Ducks hire Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator and he just stands in the background and claps? Spraining news one day at a time.
He gone!
That was Thomas Graham, the Amador Lenore, Jordan Scott, Austin Feliu, four defensive starters, your starters on the corner, and along with Kayvon Thibodeau and Carl Berg, kind of starters on the line, and they are all coming back, and it was very much a yay day around the University of Oregon. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll play the second half of Coach Cristobal's press conference. Got to talk about a lot of things, the search for an offensive coordinator, what it means. And, yeah, he took to the podium after those four guys and talked for about 22 minutes. So, yeah, hey, it's Duck Football. We do a sports show in Eugene. Some of you are kind of interested. Get Kelly Graves in here in about 6 minutes or so. They are about to kick it off, Clemson and LSU. Interesting, like when we were talking with George Schroeder, the two national titles Louisiana State has won since the implementation of the BCS for the 98 season were 2003-2007 in the Superdome. And they lost one. I think the rematch in 2011, remember they had that scintillating game against Alabama, 9-6, and then they met in the rematch and Roll Tide rolled them. That was also there. Somebody sent a shot because they keep calling this a home game for LSU. There's a lot of Clemson orange in that crowd. And, you know, the tickets themselves, I mean, what is it, like 2 hours from Baton Rouge to New Orleans? But it's like 8 hours from Clemson, South Carolina to New Orleans. And somebody just tweeted out, oh, it's George Schroeder, said Clemson well represented. It's like, I would imagine, I mean, if Oregon somehow played, what would be a parallel? Maybe USC for a national championship game at the Rose Bowl. I mean, yeah, it's a hop, skip, and a jump for the Trojans. What's it, 840 miles? That's like 12 hours.
I'm just thinking of the world that we would have to live in to where two Pac-12 teams make the playoff. And then
I was more being proximate than accurate or logical.
Then again, Georgia played in a theoretical home game against Alabama in the national championship game 2 years ago, and that one didn't go very well for him. So maybe this is Clemson's then. Actually, that's my reasoning. I'm going with Clemson. Go Tigers.
Yeah, and when you say go Tigers, you of course mean G-E-A-U-X.
The ones who play in Death Valley. Yes, go
Tigers. Yeah, that narrows it down. Yeah. So there's still ESPN is now showing the respective marching bands on the field. And man, a man of Shevitz, are you going to be hearing me yelling very loudly for Clemson tonight? And I've been yakking about it for all of November, December, and now half of this month. 3-1 odds, threw some serious cabbage down. This would be, oh, I should just not jinx it. It would be as much as I've won in a sitting on one particular bet that's not horse racing, because I've won a couple out my rear end, the daily doubles and trifectas and exactas that have gotten into low four figures.
Please do not swear. That would be my only rule. Please do not swear. Thanks.
You know, somebody asked, which do football fans consider the real Death Valley? I heard it as...
See, none of the above. The real one in California is Death Valley.
Right. I first heard it referred to as Clemson in 1980 when they won the national championship. So that was my first taste of it. And then, you know, once I became more tuned in to college football, living in a college town, covering a big-time program, you know, I started to become a lot more familiar with the subtleties and the nicknames. So is there a real one? I don't think so, because I think they're both, they're definitely both synonymous. If you were talking ACC and somebody said to you, North Carolina is going to Death Valley, you wouldn't have a problem knowing where the game was. And if somebody says, now we'll see how good Georgia is, they got a conference road game at Death Valley, you'd know that too. I'm going to call it a push.
Isn't Clemson's actually built on some sort of cemetery or a burial ground?
Oof.
I think that's why it got the Death Valley nickname. And then California was like, hey, you named your stadium after our desert, Death Valley. We'll send you a rock. And that's why they have the rock out there.
Gonna send you a rock. Thanks. That's like what Charlie Brown gets on.
Right. Is that a good present? You're like, cool. We got
Halloween.
A rock. Great. Yeah.
Oh, look, I got candy. Look, I got popcorn. Look, I got money. I got a rock. I want a rock. All right. We're going to lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline, and I've already put the notice out. Sometimes I tell my wife, beware, I'm coming home on a mission. It's my way of saying, can I please have the big TV? Please, please. God knows I don't ask you for much. All right. Let's lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline on this Monday. Talk some Oregon hoops. Challenging weekend. The Oregon women gained the split with a strong finish yesterday. And just like that, here comes number three, Stanford, on Thursday. He's the head coach on Twitter. You could follow using @GoDucksKG. Coach, welcome back to town. How are things with you on this Monday?
Steve, real good, real good. Just ready to watch kickoff. So... big night. I almost forgot that the championship game was tonight.
Yeah, a lot of people last week were like, is anybody going to remember? I was like, trust me, once it gets to be 5 o'clock on Monday, they'll figure it out.
Yeah, but I see that the president, they've got him there.
Yeah.
The only place where he wouldn't get booed is Louisiana and South Carolina people, right?
Wow. That's Coach Graves saying that. I get yelled at when I bring that up. But
Okay.
Anyway, you know, one of the things, and I've obviously talked with a lot of coaches over the years, when it comes to coaching and teaching, you know, the actual experience could emphasize what you preach. So if you're telling your team, you got to understand what it's like to go on the road in this conference, it's cutthroat, and, you know, against those two teams who play their guts out like you, you're wearing that bullseye. It sounds simple, but the games like that kind of help get your point across.
Well, they do, yeah. And to be honest with you, I don't think we played as hard as we're capable of playing that night. You know, we did some good things, but we just didn't do enough good things. And, yeah, you could tell it meant a lot to them. And they, of course, backed it up with another big win on Sunday against the Beavers.
Yep.
So, you know, they're obviously a very capable team, and anytime you're down there, you know you're going to be in for a battle because they're so defensive-oriented. And they're the kind of team that gives us trouble. Even, I think we've beaten them four times in a row, you know, twice each the last 2 years, and they've all been close. They've all been battles. You know, just some teams give other teams, a harder time. You know, it's a matchup deal. And I still don't know if we've fully embraced the fact that we're everybody's Super Bowl. And I don't mean that in a conceited way, but it's the truth. Look at the attendance numbers when we come to town.
Yep.
You know, we've got some star power. It was the Final Four last year. It was the ranking that we've had this year. And we've got to, we just got to do better. That's the bottom line. It was, we've got to do better. You know, the one game this year where we were the hunter was the USA game.
Right.
Every other one, we've been the hunted, and we haven't always handled it as well as we should.
You know, that game Friday, you know, sometimes we in the media fans can overcomplicate things. I mean, you're like the best shooting team in the world. The Wildcats shoot like 39%. In the fourth quarter, the Ducks go 5 of 17. They hit 9 of 13. I mean, any way around, just those numbers are tough to overcome.
Yeah, well, yeah, oh, certainly, and we proved that. But yeah. At the same time, our defense just, you know, let down way too much in that fourth quarter. They got two good looks, and you know, we needed to just do a better job. And it was kind of funny, you know, when things kind of go south, and they do sometimes in a game. We just we did things that are just out of the ordinary, you know, things that we don't do. Hard and fast set defensive rules we abandoned, you know, for a possession here, a possession there, and you're going, wait, what? What are we doing? And that happened. And so when it just kind of spiraled, it started to spiral. So, but, you know, the good thing is, Steve, and the bad thing, you got to get right back up on the horse, man. When you fall off, you don't have much time to, you know, lick your wounds or anything. You got to get right back up. And our team did and played a much better game on Sunday against a really good team.
Yeah, talking hoops with Coach Graves. You know, I found it fascinating today, the four football players who announced they're returning to for their senior year, and twice Sabrina's name came up. I mean, you came from two schools, Gonzaga, St. Mary's, who don't even have football. I don't have to tell you how big it is here, but what does that say about Oregon and kind of the unity among the programs that the football players are talking about, you know, we're coming back like Sabrina Ionescu did.
Yeah, and I think it's neat. I think she set a standard, as well as Herbert and Dye.
Sure.
You know, that, you know, kids can look up to. Look how Troy and Justin ended their careers with a Pac-12 championship and a Rose Bowl victory. You know, that's something you can never take away, and those are memories that they'll have for a lifetime. You know, I think we just... I don't know what it is. I know there's money involved, a lot of it, in some sports. I don't think football's one of them. Unless you're a first-rounder, I don't think it's always life-changing money. But it's hard to turn that down. But, man, at the same time, you guys, college is fun. You know what I mean? It's a great time in your life, and you're still, at this age, just figuring out who you are. What's the hurry, man? You and I have been doing it's my 33rd year of coaching. I don't know. It's got to be at least your 100th in radio. And, you know, it's like we enjoy what we do, I know. But at the same time, we're working for a living. And I just think they try to rush this. You know, enjoy it. Enjoy the time you're here. So good on those football players for coming back.
You know, ironically, it's 30 years I've been doing radio here. If you throw in three in college, I think I got you matched at 33.
Let's go. All right.
You know, at halftime on the Pac-12 network yesterday, you spoke with Joan Bonvicini, who's obviously a legendary coach as well. And you were talking about your defense and cutting off passing lanes and turning the turnovers into points. That team averages about 70 points a game. And you mentioned not so delighted with the defense Friday. What was your level of pleased overall yesterday?
Loved it. I thought we got off to a rough start in the first quarter. Couldn't handle Larry McDonald, but in the second quarter, we kind of went to a zone, and took away a lot of those driving lines that she had. And I'll tell you, Jazz Shelley and Taylor Chavez came in at the guard spot.
Yep.
And were nails. They had three steals each. And I think they completely turned the game. And so it's nice to know that you can turn to your bench and get that kind of production. So, and then we, you know, kind of let up a little bit in the second half. But by and large, we really had a good defensive effort on the road in front of about 7,500 fans. It was a great atmosphere.
You know, I was talking with some of my cohorts, and when you look at your team when they line up, I mean, Taylor is very slight. I mean, compared to the other ones, I mean, you don't put weights down for women's basketball. I get that. But, man, I always say, pound for pound, she's about as tenacious as you're going to find out there. I wouldn't want to meet her in a dark alley if she was after me.
Okay. Is that a compliment?
Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely. She's tenacious.
Yeah. No, I got you. No, she is. She is. She's got an amazing spirit about her, competitive spirit. She's a lot like Sabrina in that regard. Loves the challenge. And let's face it, she was playing at home. You know, players always seem to step up a little bit when they're at home. She had a lot of family and friends and former coaches and everybody there, and I think that was really neat. And I'm glad that she played well and helped us win the game. I'm not sure we win on Sunday without Taylor.
I agree. A couple final thoughts for Coach Graves. They haven't kicked off yet, so you haven't missed anything.
Oh, yeah, no worries. Hey, you know what? They'd rather listen to you anyway. I would.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. I don't know if I want to take a survey. But, you know, I mentioned the physical nature of both those teams. And, of course, you know, your team backs down from nobody. But Hebert, 14 rebounds, 5 on the offensive glass. Satu, 4 offensive rebounds. I mean, that yielding effort was also a big difference yesterday.
Well, we challenged them on Saturday. You know, we, like I said, Friday, we just didn't play as hard as we could have. And I think they got the message, and Sunday went out and played a lot harder, and it showed on the offensive glass. Our big three really came to play. I thought it was really cool after the game when they told Sabrina she had a triple-double. She truly had no clue that she did. I thought her reaction was priceless. And then, like you said, Ruthie with the 19 and 14, and then Satu with a really good effort. When our big three are playing like that, we're going to be difficult to beat. So unfortunately, they got to set a high standard and a consistent standard for themselves and do that every game.
Your last thought, here we go. Like UCLA in the men's game, USC in football, there's a banner carrier in this conference historically. They're coming Thursday. They've only got one loss this year at Texas. I don't have to tell you what Tara has meant to this game. Their roster has a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans. What stands out about this particular edition of the Cardinal, and first of all, how big is Matt Knight Arena going to be rocking in 3 days?
Thursday is going to be as good a basketball atmosphere as you're ever going to see anywhere, and yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, they're loaded, like you said, 9 McDonald's All-Americans on the roster, a Hall of Fame coach with over 1,000 victories. You know, it's Stanford, and they're good again. You know, the thing is, they have depth. They have no weakness. There's no weak spot, you know. Most teams, you can say, okay, let's, you know, we'll make them beat us at this spot. You can't do that with them. They can shoot the three. They can beat you inside. They can beat you off the dribble. And so we're going to have to be on point. Our crowd's going to have to be engaged. We're going to have to make that place rock. But it's crazy, Steve. So we, not to look ahead, I mean, all we're focused on, obviously, is Stanford. But then next week it's Oregon State twice, and then the following week we go to the mountains and UConn. Oh, by the way, so you know, in the next 2.5 weeks we're going to play 4 games against teams in the top 5. It's nuts.
Yeah,
I mean, it's truly nuts.
It's going to be a great ride. I almost feel like he's saying, "Oh, is that all, folks?" He's Kelly Graves. He's the head coach again. Stanford Thursday, Coach. Always fun. Enjoy the national championship game, and we'll talk again soon.
You too, my friend. Steve.
Take it easy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Did that play stand?
That was offsides on the defense. I believe Clemson ran the offensive line won't move play at the snap, which is one of my favorite trick plays in football.
And he just dumped off for they're already inside the Bayou Bengal 30-yard line. Actually, they're down to the 27-yard line. And that's got to be the deal. The Tigers. Clemson has to challenge that LSU defense because they have had some vulnerabilities. I mean, you can't. I mean, the offense is A++++++++. The defense is a B plus. Clemson is a better defensive team, but these champion Tigers are about as balanced as maybe the last Alabama championship team who could run it, throw it with Tua, and D up as well. So let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll keep you apprised of what is happening in the Natty as the Clemson Tigers face a third down at about the 24-yard line. We'll come back. We'll have a Coors Light update, and we'll hear the final segment of Coach Cristobal at today's delightful press conference, all coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
Defense worst in the league on stopping third down. It's third and goal. Mahomes to Kelce. And another touchdown for Kansas City. Kelce on a wing off the right side. Now moves to the left. Here's Mahomes. Open field for a moment. He may have been past the line of scrimmage. It's called a touchdown. I tell you, this is going to be close, Chiefs territory.
And it was close, but it was a touchdown. Man, first play from scrimmage. Joe Burrow almost gets sacked for a safety, eludes the heat, and uncorks one downfield. We were talking about Randy Moss earlier, to his kid, for about 45 yards. That's a backbreaker. You've got him. Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Holding. Hey, I'm and by the way, they just showed the guy was only about 14 yards downfield. What happened was, on the opening drive, Clemson started out with a little bit of what Bill Murray said in Stripe, razzle dazzle, got right down inside the 30. Then with the ball on the 25, third and long, Trevor Lawrence got sacked. 35-yard line, so a 52-yard field goal in pristine conditions. Their place kicker, B.K. Potter, is a sophomore, made all 77 point afters this year, made a field goal opening day of 51 yards against Georgia Tech. Then in conference at Louisville, hit a 51-yarder. They decide to pass. They punted, and they ended up with LSU back at the 6-yard line. And like Nick corrected me, after a near safety, threw it deep. It came back, and now it's facing third and 13. And eight. Dude gets away with a little bit of something there. By the way, I read that the Pac-12 refs doing this game. Now everybody's going to know. What are the odds that something horrible doesn't happen? And the conference officials are shown for the chuckleheads that they are. By the way, Clemson swarms LSU. LSU is going to be punting from their own end line. No, it was not. It was just they tried a little bubble screen inside, and that might work against Oklahoma's defense. That ain't working against these guys. And suddenly, I'm not going to say anything. All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, because today Oregon fans are rejoicing. All four who dabbed their toe in the NFL's analysis pool. The big fellas, Jordan Scott, Austin Feliu, Thomas Graham Jr. and D'Amador Lenore, the two starting corners, all held a press conference and said, coming back for our senior year. And I was goofing around on Twitter earlier. I was like, is that me? Or if you open a window, do you hear like a chant of defense echoing through the Willamette Valley among Duck fans? And somebody texted back and said, no, that's just in your head. But thanks for the contribution there.
Is that one of the many chants and voices? Is that how many voices are in your head that there are, they're chanting in unison now?
Right now, it's Go Tigers. Orange, not G E A U X. It's G O Tigers. All right. So once that quartet of current Ducks addressed the media and answered some questions and got applauded by one person, we assumed it was Jason Garrett. And then the head coach took the podium. We played the first half of what he had to say. And here's the rest coming at you on 95.3 The Score.
I think 19 out of your guys on the two deep for defense are back next season. I'm just kind of curious your thoughts. I know Troy and a couple other seniors are gone. Those are going to be tough misses, but your potential on this group with so many guys from the two deep coming back.
Excited about that. Excited about their development. Excited about year two in a scheme that really such drastic improvement, you know, the such drastic change in culture and teaching and unity on that side of the ball that it was such a huge difference in our season this year. So to have 19 of those guys back that can serve as mentors for some of these great young guys that are coming in as well, it's we're getting closer and closer to what we want to be as a program, especially as it relates to that side of the ball from a recruitment standpoint, from a development standpoint, from a personnel usage standpoint and a culture standpoint, that it's tremendously exciting.
Nobody asked you after the Rose Bowl about Jalen missed the game. It was termed as personal reasons. He posted a few days ago something rather cryptic, just green light, and I don't pretend to know what that means. Can you shed light as to his status with the program at this point?
If you don't know, I don't know either. I know that he was handling a personal matter, and he has resumed classes and workouts with us, and that's where it's at.
Coach, I know scholarship math is fuzzy and moving all the time, but these guys coming back, knowing that they're coming back, is that affecting at all the numbers that you have available for this recruiting class this season?
No, because because of what we used last year, we're capped at a certain number. Is it fuzzy? No. Is it something that moves one way or the other depending on what stays and what goes? Yeah, it does. You know, I mean, one thing I think that we've done really well here is personnel usage and giving guys opportunity. And it's fluid. It's fluid. And certainly there's some great players out there, and we're open to bringing in the very best, as long as they fit the culture and are great people and everything else, high character guys. So and you also want to sometimes save one for the spring to see what shakes up after spring ball around the country. So no, I'm sure there'll be a couple of occurrences here in the next month or so and beyond.
Yeah, well, the success of Justin Herbert running the ball in the Rose Bowl, the moves he put on, it's like, and then you got Robbie Ashford coming all the way from Alabama without an offensive coordinator being named. Does that give us a hint that maybe we'll see quarterback running a little more this year coming up?
Well, I mean, anything that helps us win, we'll do. You know, I think we protected Justin from running much at all during the season, and I think it's for the right reasons. He's one of the few quarterbacks that made it through the season healthy and got us to a Pac-12 championship and a Rose Bowl championship. But you also know the advantage it brings, especially when playing against teams that play a bunch of man coverage, right? You've got to create an extra man. You've got to create an extra gap, and he did that really effectively. We feel the quarterbacks here can run. We feel Robbie can run. We feel Butterfield can run. We feel strongly all these guys are athletic enough to provide that for us. And some maybe more than others, but it's something that we've always had in the package. We used it a lot more the last two games, and something that we're strongly looking at going forward.
Two-part question. When do you start resuming workouts? And I guess what is the team doing right now? And then can you tell us who's here from that early part of the 2020 class and your thoughts on those guys?
Absolutely. You know, with the extra week that we had, actually had an extra couple weeks, had an extra bye week, which for us is like an extra week of development, had the championship game week, that's another week. And then the Rose Bowl was played 5-6 days out before classes started. So it's quite a whirlwind for these guys. that's your reward. Hey, great job. Go back to class, right? So it's hard for them. And then you have to schedule their discretionary weeks, and you got to get the bodies back. And I think it's well documented, when we go hard. I mean, our offseason program is as demanding as it gets, and that will not change. But to be successful there, we have to take these first couple weeks and get those bodies back, particularly the guys that had a lot of snaps. So for them right now, this is discretionary time. They are voluntary workouts. I mean, guys are constantly coming in, so I imagine I'm not allowed to be down there and take attendance and all that stuff, but there are a lot of guys. You just happen to see them on the way in and the way out. Before we start up this next week, our true off-season program that leads up to our fourth quarter program and then spring ball. But that's the only way to be able to go full throttle those days. You've got to get their bodies back now. And talking to those guys that just walked out, they feel pretty – I asked them if they want to scrimmage. They said not yet, but they're going to be ready soon. Early guys that are on campus right now. Okay, T.J. Bass, Jay Butterfield, Jonathan Dennis, J.J. Greenfield, Noah Sewell. Noah Sewell is actually at the All Poly Bowl. Yes, sir. But he was here already, checked into classes. You know, real tough life, right? A week of school, go to Hawaii, come back. I mean, best deal available. Jake Shipley just got here now. He had finished up school. He took a couple extra days. Braden Swinson and Bennett Williams. And then we have a handful of other guys that will get here in March, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, we're just waiting on academics to clear up on that. You know, it's kind of neat being in the quarter system. You're afforded that opportunity. So all these guys will be taking part in the offseason program and spring ball, which is awesome. I mean, it's hard to match that type of an opportunity. So we're excited about them, for them. We have a great mentorship type of, I would say, not only opportunity, but setup where these guys are really brought in. You know, they have to take in the culture, and the culture has to accept them. It's a tremendous marriage that is fun to watch and see, because that's where development starts, that's where relationships start, and so far it's been great.
Not going to go through specific names in those you search, Mario, because I know there are many, and it's also not fair. I get it. But for tonight, because it is the end of the season in a game, does the end of the season play into it, and that some people may be otherwise disposed of?
Does this count as fishing right now? I'm just asking right now.
Well, there's
now
been reports, so I'm not going to go through specific, you know, people. Does the completion of the season help in reaching finality and all this?
It may or may not. You know, it's hard to say. I just think we have a lot of really good candidates, and we really vet these guys now. What I learned getting interviewed back when I was, and I'm not old now, I hope I'm not viewed as an old guy now, but when I was younger and had the opportunity to go on some really unique interview processes, I mean, I'm talking about put on your track shoes and stretch out, man. You're going to get worn out. You're going to be, you know, questioned and quizzed and from A to Z on everything from a system and personnel usage and watching, you know, a certain candidate's tape, then watching our tape. How would you do it? How would you critique it? Why did you do this here? Why didn't you? Let's watch and evaluate prospect tape. You know, how do you evaluate guys? What's important to you in this process? And so it's been endless. I'm not sure if I answered your question. It may or may not. I just think there's a, you know, we're trying to head in a certain direction. We feel good about the direction we're going. And it all points to us just getting better. And I think every time you have a vacancy, okay, and that relates to everyone in an organization, is you always have the opportunity to upgrade. And that's not a dig or a shot at anybody, because I think that our previous coordinator did a really nice job while he was here, but it's just the nature of the industry, right? I mean, every time you have a guy graduate and move on, you hope you're recruiting well enough to replace him at the same level or better, right? You always want to get better. And that's how we view any and all of these changes at any position, because college football is what it is, right? It's the only constant is change. So you better have your Rolodex ready. You better cut out time and everybody else and make sure you bring in the best people for the organization.
Coach, you know, with the Rose Bowl in the rearview mirror, can you still feel the kind of the afterglow and the energy from that still within the program, the coaches and the players?
Absolutely. And that was one where the 24-hour rule did not apply. It shouldn't apply, right? The season had come to an end. It's the most incredible, like, postseason bowl game I've ever been a part of. I mean, 91,000+ people. The culmination of a conference championship, all these seniors having, you know, just so many of these guys since they were knee high trying to and wanting to play in a game like this. and the way that game was just going back and forth and ugly sometimes and a little bit prettier other times, and to find a way, just to find a way, and especially on that last drive and all the things that led up to it. And no, incredible feeling, incredible. And so many families were there to witness it. I mean, I've never seen more tears in my life from some big old ugly dudes now. All right. I mean, it was like, I mean, the passion, the emotion, the, you know what it was? It was validation, right? It was validation of a blueprint that demanded every ounce of everything that we all had. And no, it was for everybody. I mean, for everybody involved. Yeah, it is still there. Our workouts will get it out of us and focus on the next thing. But to me, there's no way that you should stop and not enjoy that for an extended period of time, considering the work that it took to get there, and then realize what it took to get there so that you use that momentum to carry over to the next season. Yes, I've ordered a ton of sweaters, shirts, hats, without a doubt. Make sure the logos are on our shirts. Not this one yet. Kenny Farr will hear about that one later, but without a doubt, I hope you guys enjoyed it as well. I hope that was a great moment for everyone involved and just to appreciate. And you can tell by how long I'm taking to answer this question, which Patrick is staring at me. You gotta, you know, I'll say this is Kirk Herbstreit, okay, who is busy as can be and has got a lot of stuff going on. Mentioned before going out, he says, you better stop just for 1 second, take a deep breath and take in this setting and take in this game and what it means to so many people for so many years. And the fact that out of this game, a new legend or a couple legends will be born. And I was like, okay. So there it is.
Just wanted the next couple of weeks beyond the OC hire, Mario, from tonight and whatever your plans are for the game to, I didn't know if you were an AFCA guy. I know Joe's there and I think some others are, to next week in the Senior Bowl where you have three very prominent players playing. What is your plan for the next couple of weeks?
Yes, I did not make it to the convention due to I want to gain more ground towards the OC search. So I'm sure now I'll get in trouble for that. Thank you for making that public. Aside from that is I wanted to meet and spend time around our new enrollees. I think it's important. It's kind of strange, you know, in this college calendar, you spend so much time recruiting these guys and they get to your campus. Well, where's Coach? Right? I think it's important to be there, greet the families, greet the parents. I got to greet most of them, missed a couple yesterday, so I have to try to catch up with them before they go back. I will be joining Panay and Coach Mirbal and the Sewell family in Omaha for the Outland Trophy award presentation. And I'll be on a flight that night or the next morning for whatever many consecutive days we have left in the contact period. A very large suitcase, fully stocked with everything you need to survive on the road and make sure that we're recruiting at the highest level possible and that we elevate the standard for how we recruit. And then we'll come back and get started with the fourth quarter program. Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate you. Have a good day.
There you go. Coach Cristobal talking Duck football. Big day as the quartet of juniors who were eyeballing the NFL, Thomas Graham, D'Amador, Lenore, Jordan Scott, Austin Feliu, all say they're coming back. A big play for Clemson, tight end right up the gut inside the 10, but T. Higgins called for a blindside block. They reset it, a nice run by Lawrence, sets up second and one. Then he hits Higgins deep inside the red zone all the way down to the 6-yard line. First and goal, and they're going Wildcat, and Clemson is down to the half-yard line, second and goal. So we'll take a break, come back, we'll have Tweet of the Day, and we'll wrap up a Championship Monday coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
You're home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Doc Nick.
Hi, host Steve. Nick Rogers here, back at the Coors Light Frostproof Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. A very good nominee from at Will C. Rubin for the refreshing tweet of the day. Still the best ever CFP entrance. That is from when Oregon played in the first ever playoff championship game where the fireworks were going off. It was time to announce Oregon as a team. And there goes the Duck with a 20-yard head start, sprinting down the tunnel ahead of everybody with fireworks going off behind him. It really is the best. It's perfect and fantastic. Some Pro Ducks news from at Shan Sharina. The Knicks are waving forward Ivan Rabb and planning to sign forward Kenny Wooten of the G League Westchester to a two-way NBA deal, according to at The Athletic NBA. So big ups for him, leaving after a monstrous block party of a March Madness last year, getting his chance in the NBA. That's fantastic. This one would have won Tweet of the Day. I didn't see it until today, but it's at Frank Caliendo doing his Tony Romo impression. It is
who?
Frank Caliendo.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Impressions. Doing his Tony Romo impression. It's very, very good.
Now I want to hear it. Now I'm obsessed.
It's very good. But our tweet of the day comes from at not Bill Walton. He's almost as entertaining as real Bill Walton, but it's still a high bar to try and reach. At not Bill Walton responding to the scandal of the Astros getting suspended and fined and fired and everything, tweeting, "Hey kids, don't cheat. Best case scenario, you win 6 Super Bowls in a World Series. It's not worth it." So I was telling you throughout the day, I don't think they care. Banners fly forever. I think that's kind of all anybody cares about anyways. As LSU, hey, positive yards that aren't coming
Did
back.
Did we mention Clemson scored first?
Clemson scored a touchdown, everybody.
Trevor Lawrence on the keeper in the zone read, beats the safety to the corner. Touchdown!
He's still galloping like a brilliant, beautiful stallion. So thanks to at not Bill Walton for the refreshing tweet of the day. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at 953thescore. You can follow me on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Do not be a jerk. Just do it.
JDI.
Choose guys.
It's got to be a JDI. Justin Foster, defensive end, just dealt with the first sack of the game with unyielding pursuit, gets after Joe Burrow. I'll tell you what, that LSU offensive line is legit. They don't even max protect. Sometimes they just empty the backfield and protect with those five guys. I mean, they've got three seniors and a grad transfer, and the left tackle, Jackson Carmen, is just a sophomore. He's 345 and like the highest rated recruit like on the team. But Clemson with Venables has gotten him, and they've gotten heat on him. And you could see he's a little bit off, considering he's had like one bad set of downs the whole year. And he really hasn't had what you would call a bad game. I wonder if you go back right now, there's 5 minutes ago in the first quarter, if they've already like achieved the latest they've scored the first time this season. It's a 3rd and 13 from the Bayou Bengal 39-yard line. And the heat's coming again, and incomplete. Intended for
no play-by-play, Steve.
Jamar Chase. So I want to thank, say, when for those who do this and research games, write and whatnot, normally you have to have two depth charts. I love for the championship game, they got them both on one sheet. So you can just keep the laptop open. And I'll tell you what. When somebody talks about the 2019 college football season and defense, I mean, you heard late in the season with teams like the Dolphins and the Giants. The stud from Ohio State is Chase Young. There's kind of a 1A in there. If you're not familiar with Isaiah Simmons, who does somebody said when I was listening, walking my dogs yesterday, that it would not have been out of line for him to be like an all SEC safety, nickel cover guy, and outside linebacker. He's that good. So when you're watching the game tonight, definitely keep an eye out for What number? He's 11. He wears 11.
I have to rescind my tweet of the day from Bill Walton, at not Bill Walton, and give it to at Sports Pickle, who just tweeted, Joe Burrow definitely looks like a Cincinnati Bengal.
Wow. That's a winner. By the way, Clemson going for the bomb, and T. Higgins gets absolutely hacked by LSU's Grant Delpit, so that's going to be 15 yards. And I'll tell you what, I don't have to act like this is any analytical brilliance of a unique variety, but with the way Clemson attacks on defense, they score here, and all of a sudden it's a two-score game. The entire complexion of the 2019 Natty changes, and more importantly, it changes in my favor. All right, probably too late to get a phone call in, but Clemson has a little bit of a spring in their step, for sure. We're down to our final couple minutes of action for you tonight. So tomorrow, yeah, we'll probably talk about this game and maybe a little bit more about the Ducks, who have all decided to come back. It was a really big day. I mean, you could just hear from folks on Twitter, on text, those of you who've emailed and contacted us. Certainly with the entire quartet coming back to a defensive unit that was already losing, one of its heart and soul guys in Troy Dye, an important player in Carlberg, a substantial contributor in Lamar Winston. It was big news, faux show. All right, so that was a third and four. All right, good job by LSU, by the way. Get the defense off the field and quickly. And considering the substantial advantage that Clemson has had territorially, I mean, I don't think LSU has run a play outside their 30. And it's only 7-0. As the grandson of the late Darryl Stingley drops back to receive this punt, as Clemson gets a PI call, but then stalls just outside their own 45. So LSU has got pinned inside from their 6, their 3, and let's see what happens here. Looks like we got a little, maybe a delay of game or something. I could do play-by-play. It's not actual play-by-play. It's more descriptive. So it was another delay of game. So looking ahead to tomorrow. Because we were so duck football today, I definitely want to get into the punishment handed down by the baseball commissioner today in tomorrow's show. So enjoy it. Go Clemson. Catch up with you on tomorrow for Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.